Fevzi Turkalp, how are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you.
There's lots to talk about in the world of tech as well, and we want your questions. We'd love to hear from you this morning. If you want to get in touch, 08085 909 693 is the number to call. As ever, you can text us as well. 85058, I nearly forgot it then, 85058 is the text number if you want to get in touch. And also social media as well. If you want to tweet us, at BBC5Live is where you'll find us on social media. Any of those means of getting through to us, feel free. Fevzi, you are standing by to take people's questions.
I am.
So before we get into that, a few bits of tech news to talk about. Quite a few things on the horizon. Dell has a new laptop out, and it's you've described it here in this note you sent me a little bit earlier on as the world's smallest 15-inch laptop, which makes me think, well, isn't it just 15 inches?
Well, the screen is still 15 inches. They haven't managed to shrink a 15-inch screen. Actually, it's 15.6 inches. But actually, the size of the chassis, the case that it inhabits, is more like what you would expect for a 14-inch screen. And the way that they've managed to do that is they've made it what they call infinity edge display. It means it's got very thin bezels, almost bezel-less display. So the screen goes right up to the edge. It doesn't have a big fat plastic or metal picture frame around it. So by doing that, it's actually, you know, a much smaller laptop, and it's also very light. And it's been designed, and I sort of build it as a MacBook Pro killer. It's been designed to go head-to-head against the MacBook Pro, but instead of running Mac's OS operating system, it runs Windows 10. But it's bang up to date. I mean, this is really for people who don't want a Mac or are considering a Mac but are open to the idea of a Windows PC. It's got the latest 7th generation Intel processors known as Kaby Lake. You can choose i5 or i7. All the processor options are quad-core, and that's important because quad-core means four cores doing the work. Most processors have only got two. Therefore, this can do, in principle, twice as many things at the same time without skipping a beat. And that's kind of important because there are some software applications that actually can make use of all four cores, but others that can't. But even those that can't, you can be running at the same time. So let's say your antivirus kicks in or something else kicks in the background. It means that you've got a chance of not everything stalling. We've mentioned the display. It comes in two types. There's an HD display and there's a touch screen 5x HD display, which is amazing. It's,
sorry, say that again, Fevzi. 5x HD display.
So 5x as many dots as HD.
How much HD can a man have? That seems almost overkill.
It's funny because Apple introduced the concept of what they call retina. And retina in Apple terms is when there are so many dots that the eye can no longer discern the dots and it looks real. And this is well past any normal definition of retina. It is an impressive thing. It's nice to have the touch screen, and it's notable that although Apple has made big play with its iPad Pros and told us that they are laptop replacements, this is the laptop and it's got a touch screen, whereas no Macintosh computer has got a touch screen. Apple have been very steadfastly against it. But I think that will change in time myself. It's quite interesting that the latest MacBook Pros have got a touch strip above the keyboard that you can interact with. So my feeling is they're moving towards it, or maybe mixing the MacBook Pro with the iPad to have some sort of new device. The other nice thing about this is this particular laptop has got what's called dedicated graphics. So most laptops use the graphics that are built into the processor, and there's a basic graphics chip, and that's fine for doing things like, you know, Microsoft Word and so forth, but it's no good for gaming. This has got proper graphics card, if you like, built into it, which means that it will do moderate gaming, but it can also do anything that's graphics intensive, makes things like video editing and so forth much, much, much better. The other thing, and this is, I think, what will be attractive to people who want a powerful machine, is the RAM is upgradable. That's the memory. So, you know, that's a thing that might be 4 gigabytes or 8 gigabytes or 16 gigabytes. This machine will take up to 16, and it's got two slots. And unlike other brands, I won't mention Apple, they haven't soldered the RAM onto the motherboard.
Yes, that's very naughty of Apple.
It's a very cynical thing to do because they started doing it on, for example, the Mac Mini when they went from the 2012 version to the 2014 version, same box, same case. So it wasn't a case of, oh, we had to solder it because there wasn't enough space and we had to cram everything in. They soldered in the RAM and then they put a sheet of metal across the hard drive to stop you changing that as well. Whereas on this one, the RAM is in accessible slots. You have to undo a few screws, but you can get to the slots and you can plug and unplug your own memory. And why is that important? Why shouldn't you just buy what you need from the outset? It's because manufacturers, mentioning no names, Apple, will charge you a lot for the memory, more than you would pay for it if you bought it from a third-party vendor and slotted it in yourself, which is a very easy thing. Equally, the solid-state drive, which is the modern equivalent of the hard drive, is also replaceable as well. Stylish laptop, good build quality. The price range, is including VAT, is between $1,400 and $1,850. Although I note that there's £150 cash back, I think, up to the 22nd. So, again, comparing it to other high-end machines, these are not cheap laptops. I mean, as I say,
that is true. That's very true, isn't it? That's a lot of money for anyone's.
$1,250 with the rebate. That's pretty good for any machine with a quad core, and it is a premium build. I mean, it feels nice. It's got a sort of graphite interior, around the keys and so forth. Metal construction. It's a nice machine. So I've given it 4 stars out of 5, and a good choice for people who maybe want something high end, but don't want to run a Mac or can't afford to run a Mac, or just want something that's a bit more powerful.
Fabsy, I mentioned obviously we'd keep people up to date with what's been happening in and around Barcelona. Sure. Let me just bring you some news reaching us via the Reuters news agency. You heard Miguel, reporter who was on with us just a few minutes ago, talking about what was happening in Cambrils, where we understand 4 attackers had been shot dead by police. So this is via the Catalan Police and Emergency Services on social media, reported by Reuters. Catalan police say the bomb squad is in the town of Cambrils to determine if attackers carried explosive belts. That was something that Miguel mentioned to us a few minutes ago that they'd had reports of. This also reaching us again via Reuters from Catalan Emergency Services. They say 6 civilians and 1 police officer have been injured in Cambrils. I'll say that again. 6 civilians and 1 police officer injured in Cambrils. That, one assumes, is in addition to the 4 suspected attackers who've been shot dead, a 5th seriously injured in that shootout with police. We will bring you any more on that as we get it throughout the morning here on 5 Live. Lots of questions coming in for you now on social media, Fevzy. We'd love you to get in touch on the phone as well. 08085 909 693 is the number to call. Graham has been in touch, though, on the text, 85058, with a modem issue. Says he keeps plugging and unplugging it, can't get it to work. What do you think, Fevzy? Sounds like time for a new modem?
So, I don't...
Or a new phone line, perhaps.
Well, I'm just wondering if this is really a modem or a router, because we don't really hear much about dial-up modems these days. So those were the things that used to squeak and squawk and when they connected and sound like fax machines. So are we really talking about dial-up? It still exists, but it's kind of rare. I guess we may be talking about the router, which is the thing that brings in the internet signal and disseminates it either wired or wirelessly around your home or office. If this is something that was working and has stopped working, then that might suggest a fault. If you've been playing with the settings or you've changed something, then it's a matter of thinking, well, what changed? Did it happen when I installed a new piece of software? The settings for a router are usually accessed by attaching a computer to the router directly using a wire, something called an Ethernet cable, and then using the browser to log on to a settings page. So somewhere in the for that router will be something like 193.162. So you enter that into the browser, whatever it is for that particular router, you get the settings page up and you can look at configuring it. That said, as you have a router or a modem, you will have an internet service provider, and this would be a good time to speak to them and get them to talk you through it as well. Because the problem is, if you're not completely sure what you're doing and you start twiddling with the settings and you haven't made a note of what everything was set to before you started, it's very easy to just make things worse, so that even if the original problem goes away, and don't forget the problem may not be with your system, the problem could be with the internet service provider, so you need to ask them that question. But sometimes the problem is external. We start tweaking the settings on our routers and our setup and our PCs, and then the problem that was external is then fixed, but then our systems continue not to work because we've broken the settings. So for many reasons, it's worth speaking to the internet service provider. First of all, get them to test where they think the fault is. Is it with their service? Does it appear to be on your premises? And then get them to talk you through resetting that router, which can be more than just switching it off and switching it on.
Oh, yes, there's many things you can do. I'm shoving paper clips in small holes. I had to do that recently.
Yeah,
for,
I mean,
for any long period of time.
The other thing to say is when you switch off a router and you switch it back on again, if there is an update that was pending for the software that goes inside the router, what's called its firmware, it's possible that it will download new firmware and try and activate that. And if there is a problem with that firmware, it's possible to render a router inoperable. And in the worst case, the router ends up having to be changed because it's what they call bricked. In other words, it attains the functionality of a brick.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything.
not a good state to be in.
It can happen with smartphones and all sorts of devices that often in the process of upgrading the internal software, something goes wrong and the phone becomes inoperable and it can't restart because the software that would do the restarting is inoperable.
Michael on 85058 says, I've recently moved house and taken my Skybox with me. However, the new house only has one dish cable along with the aerial. Do I require two satellite dish cables to enable me to record one program while watching another? If so, how would I go about installing a second dish cable? This is something I came across recently. Actually, I moved from a house that had a TV aerial to a house that only had satellite. And this is right, you need two cables, don't you, to record one channel while watching another, something you don't need with a normal TV aerial.
Yeah, so you get two pairs coming in, so you get a quad, but that's standard for Sky. So if there's a working Sky setup, it will already have even the most basic Sky technology has the ability to watch one whilst recording another because it has more than one tuner built into it and two sets of signals coming from the antenna, from the dish. So it should not be necessary to make any changes. If you want to watch on one and record on a different box in a different room, then if you go the Sky solution, you're looking at what's called a Sky multi-room subscription for which they charge you extra.
Yeah.
If you want to pipe that Sky signal around the house, then there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can either run cables around, or you can get signal repeaters, which are wireless devices that will send any, doesn't have to be Sky, it can send any video and audio digitally these days from one room to another. So you have a transmitter at one end where the primary machine is and a receiver at the other end. And they tend to work reasonably well. I mean, it does depend on the distances and the structure of the house. And if there's a lot of, you know, metal construction in the house and very thick walls, they can suffer. And some of the transmitters are stronger and better than others. So if you are going to buy something like that because you want to pipe it around the house, then buy it from somewhere where you can return it. So if you buy it online, for example, you usually have a returns period if it doesn't do the job for you. The other possibility is if you don't want to run cables and you don't want to use, you know, an RF transmitter, a radio frequency transmitter, you can get devices that will encode the video and then send it through the mains wiring in the house. And then again, decode it from another main. So you come out at another main socket and out pops the video signal. You can do it with internet and you can do it with, video traffic as well. So there are a number of options. None of them always work because even that system where you send it in the mains wiring, it depends how your house is wired as to whether the signal will appear at a particular socket or not. You know, different spurs and loop configurations will give rise to different distribution of the signal.
Fantastic. Good advice. Hope that helps you, Michael.
You're listening to a BBC Five Live podcast.
If you like this, you might also like this.
Fighting Talk.
This is always quite random, as the podcast extras are. Freebies that you've been given by bands.
I got a paperweight from ELO.
To find out more about our range of podcasts, click, tap or swipe bbc.co.uk/5live.
Yeah, Tom Green and Fevzi Turkout with you. Fevzi's here until 4. It's the tech phone-in. 08085909693 is the number to call. And Fevzi, let's go straight to Helen. She's been waiting patiently during the news and sport. Helen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
What's your question for Fevzi?
My question's around chargers and how they work. I'm very confused about them. Obviously, these days we have chargers for lots of things, for Kindles and phones and tablets and things. And I have a whole load of them at home. And generally, I try to use the original, but more often than not, you don't have a sort of a fixed unit. You get a lead, and then you get a kind of a universal plug or an AC source. And what I find is that it's very confusing because sometimes the same device will take different lengths of time to charge, depending on where I'm charging it from or which power source I'm using, which lead I'm using, or that's how I'm finding it. Yeah. And to add to that, sometimes I'm charging from a single universal plug. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm charging from one that's got like 6 ports or something like that. Yeah, and sometimes I'm charging from the car. And I'm horribly confused. And I've tried to unravel it by doing internet searches, but I'm more confused than ever now.
Yeah, quite right. Go Google, Helen. let me help you with this. Everything you've said is well observed, and you're right. It can take different periods of time depending on which charger you use. So many devices now, including most mobile phones and most tablets and some cameras and some other devices, now have a charging socket, which is what's called a micro USB connector. Okay, so it's a tiny little thing, less than, I think, about a centimeter wide, if that. So there's USB, there's mini USB, and there's now micro USB. And micro USB is by far the most common connector at the end of the device. Sometimes when you buy a device, they will give you a complete charger and a cable. But sometimes they will just give you the cable. And the cable will typically be micro USB at one end and a full-size USB connector at the other. And that's that rectangular connector, which is about, a centimetre by half a centimetre. So, and the reason why sometimes they just give you the cable is because we have so many of these chargers around. So, but not all chargers are the same, and not all devices are the same. They all will, if we're talking about micro USB, they will all have the same charging voltage. That's to say 5 volts, which is what a USB socket outputs. But that doesn't mean they deliver the same amount of power, because the power is the voltage times the current, and the current is what's measured in amps or milliamps. So some chargers will deliver less than an amp, others will deliver an amp, and chargers that are, for example, made for tablets will often deliver 2 or 2.1 amps. So that's the rate at which the electrons are fired out of the charger into the device. It's a bit like how fast the water will flow through a tap in order to fill a bucket. So your battery is the bucket. As you turn the tap, some taps don't have very high pressure on them, and therefore they take longer to fill the bucket. Others will have high pressure, so when you turn the tap, it can come jetting out. And as long as the device can cope with that rate of flow, it will charge more quickly. If it can't, it will say, thank you, that's actually enough, and it will just take the current that it needs. So that's why different devices, different chargers, give rise to different charging times, because some of them will deliver a higher current than others. And often, you mentioned these multi-chargers where you have a device with maybe 6 USB connectors on it in a row. Often, some of them will be marked 2 amps and others will be marked 1 amp. Some of them might be marked, rapid charge. So there are different things that you can do, but just bear in mind, if it's a tablet, you're probably better with a 2-amp connector, a charger to it. So that's why it varies, and again, it will vary again in terms of, when you've got that cigarette lighter to USB adapter in your car sticking up, wobbling, and sometimes cutting itself off, and all the rest of it. That again will give you something different, because it will just depend on what that car can deliver in its current state and by its design. The other thing to say to you is this: chargers are very important in that if you buy one that's cheap or too cheap and unsafe, they can start fires. They can start fires because they can overcharge. the device. They can not have the right thermal cutouts for safety and all of that sort of thing. So it never ceases to amaze me. And I know this is not you, Helen, because you're sensible and you've asked this question. So I know it won't be you, but I'll mention this for other people. There's no point spending £500 on a smartphone and then deciding when you need a second charger to cheap out and buy, you know, one for £2.50 from a well-known auction site. Don't do that, because a lot of those chargers, the very cheap ones of unknown provenance, may even have safety marks stamped on them, but they can be fake. And the best, so the best guarantee is you either buy a branded charger from that manufacturer, which is not always available, not always convenient, because they certainly don't do the multi-port chargers, or you buy a good brand from a reputable retailer. So if you go to a well-known high street retailer, they, you know, and one of the ones, you know, I've never knowingly undersold, for example, and there are others, their reputation rests on it. They don't want to be in the business of starting house fires. So, you know, or equally, you know, good reputable online retailers are also good. But I personally wouldn't go for one from a source that I didn't know, because even if you know the brand, there are fakes. You believe it, there are fake chargers.
I've come across that myself. I've been caught out there.
And you know, sometimes websites are awash with it. I mean, you sometimes find it with memory cards as well, that there are fakes, and batteries, funny enough. These are terrible, because, you know, there can be safety implications with each of those. So you need to buy sensibly, you know, so you can go for the manufacturer's brand. There's a brand called Anker, which is spelled A-N-K-E-R. They have carved out a reputation the last few years of making affordable but good quality stuff. But again, even with that, buy it from a well-known retailer and one that you trust. And, you know, just maybe I go a bit too far, but whenever I got a new charger, I don't charge with it overnight until I've run it a few times during the day and I see it's not overheating and doesn't seem to be causing any problems. If you've got any concerns at all, that, you know, don't use it, return it, you know, if it seems to be running hot, if it's making a smell, any of that.
So just to check my understanding, so the power, or the speed of the power, if you like, is in the lead, not the thing you plug the lead in, you know, these universal plugs that you can put any, you plug your USB in, your standard USB in. So the thing that affects how fast something will go is the lead rather than the bit that plugs into the wall.
The lead is the pipe, if you like. It's the conduit. It you know, unless you were dealing with very high voltages and so forth, they are all similar, other than differences in build quality. The difference is in the charging device, which can be the what they call a wall wart, you know, those stubby plugs that you plug into the main socket in your home. It's got those USB sockets coming out, so they tend not to be hardwired. The wire can push in and out of it, and it's a USB connector. The point is, what is the charger delivering down the pipe? Is it delivering 1 amp? Is it delivering 2.1 amps? What is it delivering? So an iPad, for example, would ideally have 2.1 amps. Interestingly, if you look at, for example, the new iPad Pro 12.9 inch, that's got a whopping great battery in it. Even the charger that they sell you with that is inadequate and charges slowly, and you have to go out and spend the better part of £50 on another Apple charger to get proper, you know, speedy charging. And the reason why it's important is the bigger the battery, and an iPad Pro 12.9 inch has a very big battery by tablet standards, the longer it potentially takes to charge. So there's a lot to this. There are special fast charging proprietary technologies, and some companies, you know, make compatible devices and some don't. But the general rule of thumb is, get a high quality charger which has a range of outputs, so it has, you know, 1 amp and 2 amp outputs, and experiment and see what you know. Even I hate to say it, but read the manual and see what your device expects. But that's the thing. It's the charger that dictates how much current. So the power that is delivered is proportional to the current, because the voltage is always fixed at 5 volts, assuming it's micro USB. So the more current potentially the faster the charging, depending upon what the device can cope with. Sometimes, you know, it is a case of sort of suck it and see, but the other thing to bear in mind is as a device gets older and you charge it more and more, the battery starts to degrade, the rechargeable battery inside the device. So what happens over a period of time is it doesn't take longer to charge, but it holds less charge when full. Yeah, so that's the equivalent of the bucket that you're filling shrinking over time. And eventually, after a few hundred charges, it tends to become unusable because it's too small. And then you either change the battery yourself, or if it's one where it's sort of built into the smartphone, for example, then it'll have to go back for the manufacturer or a servicer to change the battery for you, and that can cost a few tens of pounds.
Alan, thank you very much for getting in touch. It's not straightforward, the old charging issue, is it, Fev?
No, but it's got better because actually the EU brought in regulations saying that phones should use micro USB, and the only ones that don't use micro USB is Apple, because they use their proprietary Lightning connector. But I think even they provide adapters that take you from Lightning to micro USB.
So USB-C, is that the new one?
USB-C is another kettle of fish. That's different again. Yeah, that's an oval.
Maybe we shouldn't open that.
That's an oval connector, a small oval connector. That's going to take over from what we'd call USB A and B. The benefit is it's not just faster USB, because at its most basic form, it's got USB 3 speeds. But the USB-C connector standard can support other standards within it, if you know what I mean. So it can do things like HDMI video through it, or Thunderbolt through it, and that sort of thing. So the same connector can carry different types and standards of information through it, and it can carry more charge as well. So USB-C based chargers can charge more quickly because they can deliver higher voltage and more current.
Crucially though, is someone ever going to invent a USB socket which you can plug in both ways, so I don't do that thing where I have
That's what USB-C is.
That's the solution.
It's an oval. So you know how, obviously, you know USB can be plugged in both ways, full size, because it's a rectangle, but micro USB cannot, because it's not a symmetrical connector.
Every time I plug in the USB end into the charger, it goes one way, then I think, oh, that's wrong, I'll try it the other way.
Yes, of course.
And then realize
it can go both ways. Of course it can. Yeah. There are some USB connectors that can do both ways because of the way they're designed, but you're right, it can't. But USB-C can be plugged in either way, because it's just an oval.
Way for the future. They finally got around that one. Phil has been waiting patiently on the line. Gave us a call, 0500-909. No, it's not 0500. We've changed the number. Look at that. I'm going back a few years. 0800-859-993 is the number to call. Phil, how you doing, mate? Good morning.
I'm fine.
What's your question for Fevzi?
Okay, I've got a laptop that's about 5 or 6 years old, and I've recently acquired a TV that I want to connect it all up to. Unfortunately, the laptop has only got a VGA port, and the TV consequently has only got an HDMI input, or it's got the yellow, blue and green sockets and everything at the back.
Composite connectors, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything that I can use that I can basically marry up the two devices so I can see things on the TV?
Yeah, okay. So VGA, video graphics adapter, is a very old standard, and it's an analog standard. That's not digital.
Yeah.
It's not bits. It's sort of varying voltages that go through those pins. Whereas HDMI is a digital standard, and it's also HDMI is both video and audio. So a single cable and socket can send and receive both video and audio information digitally, and that's the modern way. So you've got two fundamentally incompatible sockets there, but if the TV is kind to you and it has those additional connectors, if you mentioned the three connectors that are round connectors, those will be what are called composite, and there'll be one carrying the video signal and two for the stereo audio signal, left and right. So it's possible to get an adapter that will go from VGA to composite, because they are at least both analog. Having said that, you're not going to get a great picture because it's being sent through analog, because that's what the computer can manage. You know, how big is the screen?
I think it's about 22 inch.
Yeah, and it's a relatively modern TV, is it? It's a flat screen. Yeah, so picture quality is going to be poor. You're going to get a lot of fringing on the text. It's going to be tiring on your eyes because VGA is inherently poor quality to start with, because it's old, and by the time it's gone down a cable and, you know, being converted and put onto a digital screen, it's going to look even worse. So you know, you can go down that route, but I suspect you might not be happy with it. If all you're doing is playing games on it, then that's fine. But I suspect you're not going to be doing that on a sort of 5 or 6 year old laptop. If, however, you want to do word processing on it, then I really think, you know, you're going to kill your eyesight doing that. It's not
Phil,
good.
Sorry, it's Tom here. Just saying, you're about 5 years old. It hasn't got a display port on it, has it? Because I know a lot of laptops of that era didn't have HDMI out, but they had things like DisplayPort, which is a digital video out, isn't it, Fevzi?
Yeah. There are other digital outs. I mean, there's the equivalent of HDMI without the sound as well. So it's worth looking around to see what other sockets are on there. The thing to do is just, you know, do an internet search on the make and model, see if you can find a manual for it online, or at least sometimes the ports, the connectors on the laptop are actually, you know, have printed labels around them as well. It's worth seeing. Do you know what other connectors you've got on it? Are you able to name any of them?
There's hardly anything, to be honest.
Does it have something called DVI?
No.
Because DVI is the video part of HDMI. Yeah. It's HDMI without the sound, if you like. So if you had a DVI connector, you could connect that in with the right cable. You could connect that to HDMI and have all the picture but not the sound coming out of it. I would have thought most laptops, even if they are literally 5 or 6 years old, most laptops would have something on them other than VGA for the output. What we can do, do you know the make and model?
Yeah, it's a Toshiba Satellite.
Toshiba Satellite. Do you know the number? Because Satellite is a range, and they've made satellites for years.
670 rings a bell.
Okay. Can I make a suggestion? My Twitter is at Gadget Detective. Send me the model number of the device.
Okay.
I will look up what the socketry is and tweet you back. Yeah, at Gadget Detective. If you do that, Phil, I'll happily look that up for you. But you need to find the model number. It might be written on a label underneath the machine.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will do that in the morning.
All right.
There you go.
I shall wait with bated breath. Thank you, Phil.
I'm desperately trying to Google it now, but I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, well, Satellite is a bit like saying, you know...
There is a 670, yeah, but again, there's a range within those, aren't there? So there's all sorts of extra numbers and various different specs.
But I mean, you're right, Tom. I mean, that machine that age, you would expect it to have some other form of video output.
And there are a variety, aren't there? As you say, it's DVI, there's DisplayPort, there's DisplayPort Mini, there's Mini HDMI, there's all sorts of different things. And sometimes it's just a matter of a cable, so you can get like a display port to HDMI cable really simply, but anything that's analog to digital is a real nightmare, isn't it?
Because a lot of laptops kept for a long time the VGA connector to make them compatible with projectors. Even though they had digital outputs, a lot of projectors were still running analog signals through VGA, and because projectors of that age were not particularly high resolution, it wasn't a huge issue, but they usually would have had some other form of video output. My money would be on DVI.
Yeah.
Would be the most likely, some form of DVI. And then if it is DVI, if you're still listening, Phil, all you need is the right cable that either has DVI or a smaller version DVI at one end and HDMI at the other, and you know, Bob's your uncle, as it were.
Thank you very much for giving us a call, Phil. Really appreciate it. Stay listening, enjoy the rest of the show. And maybe if somebody out there has got the same sort of laptop, wants to get in touch. In fact, this text has just come in. This is from Richard. He says it's got a 9-year-old laptop, runs to an HDMI port on the TV via USB on the laptop. I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, it is. You need to have the right software drivers running on the laptop so that it can squirt the video signal digitally out of the USB socket. The problem is, on a 9-year-old laptop, that's going to be USB 2 at best, which means that the speeds are going to be somewhat limited. It may be the only way of getting it, but it wouldn't necessarily do it by default. You'd have to get particular software to do that, because normally video isn't sent out of your USB socket, but there's no reason why you can't do it other than you need the right software to do it.
A couple of people have got in touch with us, Fevzi. Top of the hour, we were talking, well, you were telling us about this amazing new Dell laptop, I think it was, wasn't it, the 15-inch?
The XPS 15.
XPS 15, that's the one.
Did I actually say that? I think I may have.
I think you did. No, I think it was a couple of people came in late to the conversation and just didn't hear the model number.
So Dell have got different ranges, and the XPS range of their laptops is the sort of the premium end of it. They have other ones that are called Inspirons, but we're talking about Dell XPS 15, which is the one with the 15.6 inch, and there are I think about 5 different configurations that you can buy, which start with the i5 processor and 8 gigabytes of RAM and go up to an i7, which is a faster processor with 16 gigabytes. But as I say, you can always upgrade that. One point I'll just make to you about this: the ones that the cheapest one in that range comes with a hard drive and a small solid state drive. The reason why that is a problem is, in order to make room for a physical hard drive, the battery is smaller, and therefore you get less battery out of it. Even if you later get rid of the hard drive and replace it with a solid state drive, you will end up with less battery life. So my advice to you would be to start with the cheapest SSD only one, which is starts with a 256 gigabyte solid state drive in it. So it's £100 more than the most basic model, but it means that you'll have a bigger battery in it, which is important, because it's got a quad core processor, so it's going to need a bigger battery.
Well, speaking of processors, Stu in Oxford has texted us on 85058 with a 3-word question: Ryzen or i7. These are the two top end processors from the two big chip manufacturers, aren't they?
Yeah, so this is Ryzen on the ascendancy. So Ryzen is made by AMD, which was for a long time a huge competitor to Intel. So you either bought an Intel processor or you bought an AMD processor.
Had an Athlon for a long time.
Yeah, and for many years, the only way AMD could sell their processors was to make them cheap as chips, if you'll pardon the expression. Thank you.
Need a rimshot sound effect for that.
Thank you. In every performance term, the Intel processors were showing the AMD a sort of clean set of heels. You know, they were faster, and they generated less heat and used less battery power if they were in a mobile device. And that the only reason to buy an AMD was just because it was really cheap. So, and still today, if you find a laptop that's sort of £200, £250, £300, it's much more likely to have an AMD chip in it than an Intel, because Intel have always charged a premium for their chips because they've been premium chips. Now, AMD have come up with something called the Ryzen, with a Y, and it is an amazing set of chips under the heading of Ryzen, and it gives the i7 a good run for its money. Under certain circumstances, I think that the Ryzen is a good choice, and I think it bodes well for AMD, because they will only continue to improve that. Intel has kind of stalled. It's kind of interesting how these things go. Intel missed the boat really on mobile devices. You know, it was always producing these desktop-based processors for desktop computers or even for laptops, but their mobile processors were drawing too much power, and they sort of got overtaken by the likes of Apple and their processors, for example. So I would say, if it's a desktop, I would probably still stick to Intel because it's tried and trusted. But for the first time, the AMD is a reasonable choice, the Ryzen, not anything else from them. But I'd probably still go for an i7, just because it's, you know, the architecture has been tried and trusted for a long time, and therefore I'd probably prefer that. But you're right to raise the question, and in the future, I think Ryzen will be a very serious competitor for the for
and
Intel.
Just very quickly, in that 10 seconds or so, fair to say that you don't always have to go for the fastest processor because it can be overkill in some cases, and
to balance the money out. Don't put all the money in the processor and then the rest of the system be a bottleneck. Spread the money across the specification. You know, make sure you've got an SSD, make sure you've got enough RAM. So spread it out in that way.
You're listening to a BBC Five Live podcast.
If you like this, you might also like this.